Hello and welcome to this week's Revenue Rocket Shoot the Moon podcast, broadcasting live and direct from Revenue Rocket World Headquarters in Bloomington, Minnesota. Revenue Rocket is the premier M&A advisor and growth strategy advisor to IT services firms worldwide. With me today are my partners, Matt Lockhart and Ryan Barnett. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey there, Mike. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, good morning, guys. Thanks for having us on here today, and I appreciate everyone listening. As always, feel free to send any questions that you may have over to info@revenuerocket.com, and could be the topic of our next podcast. And also, thank you, any of those who are in our email distribution list, if you voted for your favorite podcast, we really appreciate that. And if not, we'd love for you to sign up for that today. But moving on, today we are talking about something that we see within deals on for IT services companies and M&A, really around something we would call retrading. And I'll walk through kind of the process. Typically, when you a firm goes to market or is for sale, or even for not for sale, there will be a letter of intent that is engaged upon. And that letter of intent outlines the details of the deal. And it will have typically an enterprise value. It will have some terms of the deal, outline some timing associated with the deal. That is a non-binding LOI, in which it means that almost all of the terms can be changed within the LOI, with the exception of the non-disclosure and the no-shop provision. But when you enter into an LOI, typically, there's a fairly good faith measure that the terms that you outline will be very or closely similar to what is executed when the deal is completed. And if so, your LOI is going to line up fairly close. There's always going to be some minor changes, but in theory or in practice, you want to have that big section of the deal pretty close to the end. If it's not, there may be something called a retrade. So today we're going to kind of dig into what a retrade is and why it matters and where IT services companies can be careful either when they're buying companies or selling into the pitfalls and benefits of Kate kind of taking a second look at that LOI. So, Mike, why don't you just help us out? What is a retrade?
Yeah, to just set the stage, a retrade is typically driven by a buyer once they're under LOI. And an ethical buyer will initiate changing the terms or price or terms of the deal pursuant to things they may have found in diligence that are material. And, it could be, something that was different than what they did in their what we'll call sort of pre-LOI due diligence, or something that's changed, or something in the details of reviewing the financials and the business that was not as positioned or portended by the seller. That's a warranted retrade. That's something that should occur because, the business just isn't as it was positioned pre-LOI and or something that may have been discovered in earnest in diligence. It may have to do with, a million things, right? Customer concentration. It could be with a lost customer. It could be a variety of things. However, I'd also add and sort of throw up a red flag that there are sort of bad actors in M&A that will just want to get you locked up under an LOI, kind of oversell their capability or their ability to do a transaction, and then take that time while you're off the market because there's the so-called no-shop provision in the LOI that doesn't allow you to look at other offers while you're under that LOI to get to the real value that they intended to pay to begin with, and oftentimes that's below market. And so oftentimes the concept of a retrade has had a negative connotation because there's so many or there is a material number of folks that do try to lock up firms in the no-shop and then work down the deal. I think you have to be, as a seller, you have to be cautious of that. But you also have to be aware that there are real reasons why, a retrade may make sense if there's material change in your business post-LOI.
Well, and to that, either from Mike or Matt, who can do the re-rate and why are or what are a few reasons of why retrades can happen? for example, we're working on a deal now where it's a bit more of a structured process. And the information that was completely available, we're on the buy side in this one, is not as clear as we'd like because there's a kind of a hurriedness to the deal to get it done. So we're kind of going in a little bit blind. That seems like something where I could see some changes in a deal if there was more access to data in the first place. Well, Matt, would love for you to chime in on kind of who and why this could happen.
Yeah, I think to Mike's point, the context of a retrade, well, is a negative one. And so let's frame the context of a retrade as something, you know, typically that a buyer would do. And they always sort of go in with the intent that they're going to, you know, try to chip away at an enterprise value. And, you know, that's just their method. And it's not really the right thing to do. It's kind of ugly. We don't see that as much anymore, but that's different than renegotiating based upon changes that are found in due diligence by the buyer or could be found or changes that happen in a seller's business that are material during the due diligence process post LOI. I think that the most important thing that, you know, Mike pointed out is that in an LOI, when done ethically, people are putting their best foot forward in terms of what they feel an appropriate enterprise value is and applicable term structure. Now, in due diligence, lots of things can happen. They can find out that what was understood as the EBITDA at the time of an LOI was simply incorrect. There wasn't enough information that was readily available pre-LOI to verify the EBITDA. Something materially could have changed in the forecast during the due diligence process. The selling company could have had a major, you know, sales win that was unexpected, or an existing customer could come forward and say, "Hey, I want to triple the business because of something that happened that you didn't know about." Or conversely, a major customer of the seller's could have dropped a contract, which would have, you know, materially changed the forecast moving forward and the expected EBITDA of, you know, in the current year. So there's real things that can happen that justify the changing of an expected enterprise value during due diligence that are, you know, are completely above board. And, you know, that's in my opinion, different than the context of, "Hey, I'm just going to retrade the price because I want to. And I didn't have any expectation of keeping the enterprise value the same as what I put in the letter of intent."
Are there some methods that could help adjust an offer to address some of those market conditions? I'll give an example. If we outline an enterprise value and say there's an enterprise value that is a concrete number, I'm just going to throw out there, $20 million. And there's some terms associated with that are cash and maybe an earnout of some sort. Is there a way in structuring a deal that make retrades less based on economic or financial conditions that would be more palatable? For example, staking the deal on the forecasted EBITDA or the EBITDA of the deal compared to a concrete absolute enterprise value number.
Yeah, you know, I would say certainly there are, and it depends on sort of how you position the LOI. I think also a great way to avoid, as it relates to what indexes the value, like it could be an EBITDA multiple, for example, based on agreed upon approach at a particular time, point in time. Like, let's say the final purchase price is determined within one month to close, and it's based on an EBITDA multiple for the trailing 12 months revenue, EBITDA, then certainly that's one way to sort of have it float and be, particularly in a growing business, maybe advantageous to the seller, and certainly a fair way to do it. I think the other thing that's important, though, as a buyer, as you're thinking about doing a deal, to avoid a reputation as becoming someone who retrades deals, which I think is a bad thing. You have to do enough due diligence to get to comfort in issuing that LOI, yet not so much that the seller is not going to give you the data, right? Because there is a very delicate balance between how much information you can get pre-LOI and is appropriate, and versus kind of what you might want to see in due diligence. And you oftentimes get pushback from sellers if you ask for too much pre-LOI. And so you need to try to be smart about what you look at as a buyer, so you can do enough diligence pre-LOI to get it solid enough so that you have a high likelihood of getting it done. But yeah, not so much that you can't even get to the LOI. And so I think, you know, using a competent advisor will help you sort of strike that balance, as well as doing a thorough pre-LOI financial review will also help you have a more fortified document, one that is much less likely to require a retrade. But to your point, Ryan, certainly there's ways of structuring the LOI so that you can minimize the risk of a retrade, particularly the business that's growing quickly, that's being acquired, or one that may have maybe go in the other direction, right? That has, you know, lost a customer, or maybe in a, you know, financial, some sort of financial crisis that's looking to sell for a particular reason.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Going through the negotiation and due diligence process is difficult for both buyers and sellers. The sellers are putting their kind of emotional heart out there, and they're going through a lot. Buyers are really want to ensure that the deal is win-win for everyone. And there's a lot of time and thoughtful process that goes into this. If you're going in as a buyer and you have locked someone up in this process, sellers, I think at the end can often feel really almost trapped in the deal that they have. That's why some of these an unscrupulous retrade can happen. That's kind of where we've seen it. What happens culturally when firms go back and forth and kind of moving forward? Don't these guys have to work together? And what happens when two firms are battling over some of these things?
Well, not always do they have to work together. Think about there's a strategic opportunity where the buying firm has sort of feels as though they have most all of the operational management capabilities, and they can see most of the seller's executive leadership walking away soon, right? And so they feel, or maybe have the hubris to believe, there aren't real cultural ramifications. Now, we know that that's not true, right? That people talk. If a retrade happens, it's going to oftentimes create ugliness. The selling founder or management team will probably talk a little bit about it anyway. So oftentimes the buyers may feel like, it's not that big of a deal. Wherein the reality is, especially in our vertical, in the IT services space, it's all about people. And it's all about the retention of people. And so, I think that it's a really good point, Ryan, that there likely are cultural ramifications, regardless of whether or not the, you know, executive team of the selling company is sticking around for the long term. Now, in the case that the buying company is really wanting to leverage and grow with the selling company's executive team, well, then it's just it's a bad move overall, because you're not setting a foundation of trust, and we all know that that's the number one thing that can erode culture.
Right. Absolutely. Are there signs that a seller should look for to avoid a retrade? It seems like we've seen examples of almost too good to be true enterprise values is a leading indicator that they might never get to that number. Mike, anything that you've seen that might be sellers should be just watch out for?
Yeah, I think you hinted pretty accurately about it. If it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. And, you know, understand kind of where market multiples are in the business. You know, I often say this is not a Turkish bazaar when a business is sold. It's not like there is no methodology associated with valuation other than what the seller's asking price is. There's very structured valuation modeling and comps analysis that goes into a credible buyer making an offer. And I don't often like analogies to real estate in our industry, because it's very different than real estate. But the one thing that is similar to real estate is the way that a house is valued and the way you analyze comps for similar transactions in your area is a function of the valuation process, whether you're applying for a mortgage or whether you're, you know, just a realtor is going to bring you to market. They know where that house is typically going to sell based on fair value. And for the buyers that try to sell it wildly above fair value, they don't get sold. And the same sort of thing, or they don't get financed, or there's all kinds of ramifications. Similar things happen in M&A. Just because a buyer may be qualified to do a deal or have cash doesn't mean they're going to pay up or overpay or whatever that might be the case. So, you know, you need to be pragmatic about that. And if an offer comes in that seems to be wildly above where you know the market to be or where your advisor tells you the market is, I think you have to approach that with caution, because it may be a ruse to get you to sign an LOI in an effort to go through a very daunting retrading exercise in order to get you to fair market. And in the end, you'll either agree to that process and sell the fair market, or you'll shut it down and just say, look, I'm not, you know, I'm kind of wise to your approach, and I'm not going to be beat down by you over things that don't make sense. You should know that, and I think Matt made mention to this, is that negotiating post-LOI is not the same as retrading. There are some activities or things that sound similar, that are truly similar, but there's many, many things that have to be negotiated in a transaction post-LOI. Some, you know, 200-plus things that need to be negotiated, typically. And when these things are being negotiated, that's not retrading. That it's just part of the reason why you have to have a competent advisor sort of looking out for you, because there are things that are warranted to be negotiated that may impact purchase price or structure on really both sides of the transaction. And that's why a knowledgeable advisor is important to have on your side of the table. If there's kind of a non-warranted retrade attempt on behalf of a buyer, you know, a knowledgeable advisor can call that out and say, well, you know, nice try, but no, that's not a real objection or issue, and it shouldn't impact purchase price or terms, and they'll have your back, right? They'll have your best interest in mind. And so, you know, it's been many cases where we've advised sellers to, you know, walk away from deals from, you know, buyers that may be trying to take unfair advantage of their position after signing an LOI. We're usually brought into those deals late after an LOI has been signed, and they're trying to figure out how to get it to work. And, you know, oftentimes they can't get that done. We generally don't allow those things to occur in the LOI process because we just, you know, are knowledgeable enough to know that if an offer is too good to be true, we can start to question why they're paying such a crazy premium, and, you know, vet that risk for you as your advisor.
The other thing I would say to look out for is if an LOI comes like very quickly. And, you know, we see this from, you know, some buyers who are like, hey, I'll produce an LOI within 2 or 3 days, right? And you're like, well, have you done enough thinking and diligence even to produce a letter of intent? And so, you know, we'll be super wary of that. An LOI that is produced without an understanding of the adequate funding sources is another red flag that, you know, I think sellers need to look out for, because, you know, oftentimes, oh, geez, you know what? I was only able to come up with this much money. And so here's the new, you know, here's the new offer, right? There's a number of things that nefarious characters may try to do. I think that people have successfully sold their businesses without the help of an advisor. Sure, they have, but it's hard. And yeah, it can be self-serving, but really go get an advisor, because they've seen it 100 times before, and they're going to help you to avoid the situation.
And this is one where both the angle of where you take it, speed throughout the whole process can help, I think, reduce some of this as well. If a process goes 6, 7, 8 months in due diligence, it's very easy to get mired in the details and things materially change compared to immaterially and negotiation changes. Mike, Matt, I'll turn it over to you for any last kind of closing thoughts here.
Sounds good, Ryan. No, I think, I mean, Matt, I don't know if you have any further thoughts, but I think in the end, just to kind of bring you up to speed, we may sound daunting, but certainly there's great opportunities still exist in M&A, and there's great deals getting done every month. You're revenue rocketing. We certainly welcome the opportunity to have a dialogue with you about your business. If you have questions about it, someone approaches you with some offer that you think looks a little too good to be true, feel free to call, and we can weigh in. Certainly happy to do that on a call without any obligation to work with us, and can discuss your situation and see if we can help you make some decisions. Matt, any other thoughts on retrades before we wrap it up?
No, I think a great topic. Ryan, thank you. Hopefully we see this less and less, and it's not going to help get deals done, and we know how hard it is to get deals done in any event. So great topic, and look forward to the next. Back to you, Mike.
Thanks, Matt. Ryan, with that, we'll tie a ribbon on it for this week. Shoot the Moon podcast here at Revenue Rocket. We encourage you to, if you have questions, send us a note at info@revenuerocket.com. And feel free to pass on the podcast to anyone you know who could benefit here, either Apple or Spotify, and to listen into the Shoot the Moon podcast. Look forward to you tuning in next week. Take care and make it a great week.